No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.
So welcome once again to this Brass Tacks podcast. It's weeknights, 9:25 on CNN News 18. My name is Zucker Jacob, and with me, Anusya Kumar. We've got a big show today.
A very big show, Zucker, because it's a big verdict that's going to be coming up in the Supreme Court tomorrow. A little over a year after the landmark Sabarimala verdict, which allowed the entry of women of all ages inside this temple in Kerala, the Supreme Court is all set to review that verdict.
Yeah, it's interesting. Somebody was saying that in 90% plus cases of the Supreme Court, it's very rare that the Supreme Court has actually changed its own order in a review. In 90% cases, it continues to uphold its own decision. In this case, I think what is interesting, what has happened in between these two verdicts, the order and then the subsequent review, is the Ayodhya verdict. Yeah. And in the Ayodhya verdict, I think the devotees of Ayyappa seem to find a ray of hope. That is that in the Ayodhya verdict, the court said that Ram Lalla was a juristic entity. So if Ram Lalla is a juristic entity, then so should Ayyappa.
So essentially the beliefs of any devotee should be kept in mind in that case.
Yeah. In fact, in this case, it is akin to saying that the deity itself has rights. Mm. So just like Ram Lalla had rights, but not the Ram Janmasthan, in the same way, Ayyappa himself has rights by virtue of being a juristic entity. And if Ayyappa has rights, then it's part of his rights that he doesn't allow women of a certain age. Again, like I said, this is the hope of the devotees. The court may or may not find merit in it. What is interesting to me is also that it's pretty much the same bench other than the Chief Justice.
It is the same bench. Yeah, absolutely.
It was Deepak Mishra who was heading the previous bench, and this bench is headed by the current CJI. Yeah. The remaining four judges are the same. So will they come to a different conclusion in the space of a year? I'm not sure. But it's going to be interesting. I think this would portend politically, certainly it would really mean a lot for the state of Kerala. We saw the kind of violence. I don't think people want to go back to that kind of violence. And ultimately, there's going to be, if societal acceptance has to come, if the decision were to be upholding that women of all ages can pray, if societal acceptance has to come in the state of Kerala to that decision, I think there is still ways to go before that happens.
Now, you were talking about the same bench hearing this review petition. If I remember correctly, out of the five judges, I think it was only the sole woman judge, Indu Malhotra, who had a problem with women entering the temple.
She had a dissenting opinion.
She had a dissenting opinion. All of the others were of the opinion that by not allowing women inside this temple, it is akin to taking away the dignity of women, which is under the Constitution.
Yeah, and not just that, it's a violation of fundamental rights.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the difference between the Sabarimala case and the Ayodhya case. While the deity may or may not be a juristic entity, the court can very well say that the deity in Ayyappa's case also is a juristic entity. But since it is a violation of fundamental rights of certain sections of people, in this case women between the age of 10 and 50, that holds way more legal precedence and way more legal weight than the rights of a deity. So I think that is going to be the legal sort of conundrum that the court is faced with. Is the violation of fundamental rights going to be far graver or a far higher barometer and a far higher benchmark for the court to decide on? Whereas in the Ayodhya case, there was no violation of fundamental rights. It was a title dispute. The parties went to court. And then, of course, the court said, in matters of belief, at least in some sections of the judgment, it did say that in matters of belief, the court should not get involved, and that matters of theology should be left to theology itself. The question of fundamental rights, I think, then brings a whole new dimension to this argument, and therefore I believe the court may well be less inclined in overturning and reviewing its own judgment in the Sabarimala matter.
But we saw some absolutely extraordinary scenes playing out after the verdict came out the last time round in September last year. The Sabarimala season is now coming up. In 2 days, the temple is going to be opening again. There's massive security in place.
Yeah.
But seeing the backlash that was witnessed last year, that is a major factor that's going to be playing up on the judges' minds tomorrow.
Yeah. Again, in the Ayodhya matter, they did stress about peace. Yeah. They did stress about finding a solution. They did stress about finally giving closure. And if that were the barometer, then clearly this is the best judgment that they could have come up with.
Right.
But then the job of the courts is to interpret the law, is to uphold the law.
It's the job of the state to ensure security, which went completely out of hand
absolutely.
Last year.
And I think in the case of Kerala, what happened was, there have been other cases, most notably, of course, Jallikattu in Tamil Nadu, which is against cultural practices,
right.
And the state and all political parties came together and passed an ordinance, and it was eventually ratified by the central government. That's how they circumvented the Supreme Court order. What happened in Kerala was two things. One, the left government clearly said that they're not interested in bringing an ordinance. And B, I think Pinarayi Vijayan sort of sensed a political opportunity there and said, there's a greater constituency in the state that he'll be able to appeal to. He can cultivate women as a constituency if he were to be seen on the side of women's rights activists and women's rights advocates. So he made that political calculation. Unfortunately, then it became a contest between the believers on the one side and the women's rights advocates on the other. And that's why we saw the violence.
No, so how does it play out politically in terms of, we were talking about Pinarayi Vijayan right now. His stand or non-stand over this whole Sabarimala issue sort of played out in his favor in terms of the elections, or rather, did it give the Congress the upper hand in the elections and BJP could not really make the most of it?
But I think that's also a reflection of the state of the BJP in Kerala. I don't think it's a... the problem for the BJP has always been that at the state level, they don't have a credible leader. This has been a big ongoing problem. They've tried multiple state presidents in the last few years. Nothing's quite really worked. So I think unless they get a credible face and a credible leader, I would say the BJP will find the going politically at least very difficult in Kerala. Having said that, they have made inroads. They have made significant inroads in significant caste groups amongst the Nayars, most notably. This could potentially be an opening for them come the 2021 elections. But they need a rallying point. I think if Sabarimala, if the court were to not overturn its order and were to say that women will be allowed, I do sense that there will be a flare-up. I do sense that there will be some amount of violence. And perhaps, who knows, maybe the BJP will this time, second time round, be the beneficiary of that violence.
Well, let's see. Sabarimala is, of course, the big domestic story that we are following. The other international story that is playing up and is going to come to a head tonight is the impeachment hearing of Donald Trump, which, for the first time, is becoming public.
Yeah, so basically, American people will be glued to this channel called C-SPAN, which made a name by just live broadcasting these congressional hearings. They'll be very interested. They'll be very interested in knowing a lot of the detail of many of these people. They've already testified behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Now, this will be the first time they'll be doing so publicly. They'll be interested in the extent of the quid pro quo, just the extent to which Trump was willing to go to use the services of a foreign government in trying to get a point over his domestic political rivals. Already there is a great deal of suspicion amongst the average American public about the influence of Russia and other foreign powers in domestic American politics. This will only sort of cement those fears a lot more. But I think politically, what's going to be interesting to watch out for is, as these testimonies come out and as the public in America consumes this, this whole witch hunt theory, this whole witch hunt idiom that he seems to have taken, is going to become very, very difficult to continue to take that position.
Right.
Because there will be gory details. There will be the extent to which he was willing to go and the extent to which he was able to use his mercenaries like a Rudy Giuliani or others in pressurizing a foreign government. And Americans generally don't like that. Whether you are of a Democrat leaning or whether you are Republican leaning, Americans don't like foreign governments interfering in their dirty mud. Their dirty linen is washed in front of their people, and that's how it should be. Getting in foreign powers just brings in a whole new access into domestic politics in America. And I generally think that the longer these public hearings go on, the more damaging it will be for Trump. And certainly he will find it indefensible to continue to harp on this witch hunt theory. I think it'll increasingly become clear that this is not a witch hunt, that Trump actually did what he did.
But how far can it realistically go? Because, fine, if it goes to the Senate for a trial, the Senate is controlled by the Republicans.
Yeah.
And the Republicans are fully backing Trump.
They completely are. So I don't think Trump is going to be removed from office.
But he could be impeached.
He could be impeached.
Yeah.
And to go into a re-election bid with the tag that he's an impeached president, I don't think that's a place any president wants to be. That will have its political costs. And I think Trump is aware of those costs. Also, you know, I think what the gamble that he is taking is that, A, this will rally his base. They will perceive this as a witch hunt. They will see Trump as the victim and not as the oppressor in this case. The Democrats are hoping that this will actually reveal the evil side. This will make a public case for the evil side of Trump to the American public. But ultimately, you know, whichever way it goes, I don't think Trump comes out of this looking good. And I think that's his worry. He can contain the damage. He can try to limit the damage, but the damage will still be there. And I think going into a tough re-election with the tag that he's an impeached president, I don't think even Trump, given all his rhetoric and divisiveness and, you know, all the kind of nonsensical, crazy stuff that he says, I don't think that's a tag that he wants to go into a re-election with.
All right. The timing clearly can't be worse for Donald Trump. But if you think it's time to switch off the noise that passes off as debates, then tune into Brass Tacks at 9:25 tonight. We'll only give you the news, no opinion, just the news for 1 hour.
No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacobs.